What I'm interested in is the kind of feeling that you get when you're around great athletes or something, and they're on the basketball court or they're at the golf course, and they're is a certain competitiveness and a certain cooperation. And everyone's there, they're taking it seriously, they're enjoying themselves, and they're on a mission. And how to build that on the internet in a way where people don't engage physically is tricky. But what we have as a benefit is the ability to go, like I was saying earlier, to take that gift of the internet, which is the global recruitment pool, and attract those people. And if we can do that, I think we have something really special on our hands.
Welcome to Crazy Good Turns. This is the podcast that recognizes and celebrates people who do great things for others. I'm your host, Frank Blake, and I am really looking forward to our guests today. I want to start by giving some context for the show. In May of 2021, we were privileged to have as a guest David Perrell, a thoughtful writer and innovator and founder of The Rite of Passage, which is an online writing school. And as we were talking last May, David mentioned that several years prior, he had been the recipient of a grant from the Emergent Ventures program that's led by Tyler Cowen. And if you've listened to this show before, you know I'm just a huge fan of Tyler and of his podcast, Conversations with Tyler. Tyler's been a guest on this show as well. And when David talked about the impact that the grant had on him, we decided to try to pay it forward by offering a Crazy Good Turn scholarship to David's Rite of Passage course. And we asked listeners to apply. We received a lot of great applications, and we picked three people to give the scholarships to: Kelly Jackson, Mitchell Wilson, and Tommy Lee. And they're all guests on today's show, as is David. So I'm going to introduce Kelly and Mitchell and Tommy in a minute, and we'll talk about the impact of the program and what they learned from it. But before we do that, I want to start by giving David a question, something that I'm curious about. I read faithfully David's newsletters, and he recently put out his 200th, which is a pretty amazing accomplishment just in itself. And I will say, given the quality of the newsletters and how thoughtful they are. And the title of one of the pieces was The Paradox of Abundance, about how we have an abundance of writing on the internet, yet it is so polarizing, and David, in your words, so emotionally jarring that this is the paradox of abundance. And so I'd love to start, David, with you making a comment on that, because in my view, your Crazy Good Turn is trying to make the internet a saner, more responsible, and enriching place.
Wow, I'm honored. Frank, just thank you for giving these scholarships. I mean, as you mentioned, that grant from Emergent Ventures just radically transformed my life, and I hope that it does the same for the people who you're able to help. I think that when you're getting started, it's just you lack self-belief and you lack conviction that you're somebody worth listening to. And when somebody of your stature hands out a sum of money, it's not just about the money, it's just about that belief. And I mean, we went through so many scholarship applications and ended up with these three winners. So I just want to thank you for that. As far as the paradox of abundance, I was speaking to a woman yesterday on a talk that I was giving, and she asked me, hey, I'd like your advice. And I said, okay, how can I help? And she said, well, I'm the director of content at a company, and it's my job to produce 8 articles a week. I'd like your help.
Wow.
8 articles a week, and I'd like your help doing that. And I think that that's sort of the frame that I'd like to set for this idea around the paradox of abundance. I think that way too much of the internet is trying to produce this content factory. And what ends up happening in these markets of abundance is, and you see it with food, right? You see it where the number of Americans who are overweight and obese is the highest it's ever been, but also the number of Americans who just have these sort of incredible bodies who are able to take advantage of science and healthcare and these state-of-the-art gyms is higher. And so what you end up having is when you have markets of abundance and you see it with food, you go to the supermarket, there is so much food there, and there's an element of personal responsibility to stay around the edges, to have the vegetables and the fish and the healthy stuff, and to not go to the middle and get stuck with the Twinkies and the Kit Kats. And I think it's the same thing with the internet, where we have these gifts of abundance, and the people who are able to eat well are able to live incredibly healthy lives. And I think that at the tails, we're going to see people who are living longer and longer, but I also wouldn't be surprised if maybe even the median person lives shorter. And so I think that that is the paradox of abundance, that for the people who are able to have strong will and to be discerning in what they consume, they have an enormous advantage. And I think it applies to information as much as it applies to food.
And so how does that, if at all, how does it then reflect through to Rite of Passage and your online writing course?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for Rite of Passage, you know, if you ask a chef and you say, hey, what can I do to cook better, right? You go to a sushi restaurant, and so you're talking to the head chef, and they'll talk about sourcing. They'll talk about how they need to find high-quality fish that's fresh, that is well-fed, and that is going to make it to the table in a short amount of time so that the fish, just before it even enters the kitchen, is of high quality. And that's something that we talk a lot about in Rite of Passage, that the quality of your output begins with the quality of your inputs. And once people start taking writing seriously, start taking their output seriously, they also begin taking their inputs more seriously. And that is the first step towards becoming a better writer and becoming a better thinker and honestly, just becoming a better human being.
And maybe just before we get into the three scholarship winners and talk a little with them, describe again the Rite of Passage and how it works.
It's a five-week cohort-based experience, and we bring in anywhere between 250 and 400 people from around the world. I think the last cohort, we had people from, say, 33, 34 countries. And people write five articles in 5 weeks. We have a bunch of mentors. We have community stewards. And we have a team of roughly 25 people who help our students improve their writing, find people who they can connect with on a deep intellectual and engaging level. And then it's my job as the instructor to set the energy, set the tone, set the seriousness for the mission, and to also provide the canonical frameworks that everybody can use. And as a team, we orbit around those frameworks and have every person work on their own writing individually, but hopefully leave with a small group of friends who they can have deep conversations with and who they can write with week after week.
That's fantastic. And just the international element of that is reflected on the folks here on the show. And maybe we'll use that as a good segue for introductions. And we'll start with Kelly Jackson, who I know is in Australia. So, Kelly, how are you? And please give a short, you know, little bit of a short summary of yourself.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to thank you and David for the opportunity as well to participate. It was really amazing. But my personal story is I was an accountant for sort of 20 years, and I had a bit of a life shock. I almost didn't kind of make it through life 1 year and decided that I was going to ride a unicycle around the world, except I couldn't actually ride a unicycle. So I went and learnt and rode the length of two countries, became the first person in the world to unicycle in North Korea, and then took up a small community group.
So I'm sorry, Kelly, I just have to interrupt that summary to say, you know, I think it occurs to a universe of no one other than yourself that in some moment of epiphany in life, I've got to unicycle the length of a country. I mean, without knowing how to unicycle. I'm sorry to send us off on a tangent, but how did that come into your head?
It was an idea that I'd had for a long time because I like bike riding, but everybody kind of wants to ride a two-wheel bike around the world. And I thought, how can I combine bike riding and travel and just make it a little bit harder?
Well, I'm sorry. Which were the countries that you unicycled?
Taiwan and South Korea.
Wow.
And I'm trying to do a one country sort of every year, but obviously COVID's interrupted that. Yeah. And on the way to becoming my adventurous self, I started looking after an outdoor group, a volunteer outdoor group. And so I've been leading that for about 4 years as well.
And final question, then we'll turn to Mitchell next. What prompted you to apply for the scholarship?
Well, I have this interesting story to tell about kind of unicycling and how I came to do it and what I learned along the way. But I really didn't know how to get it out. And it was rite of passage that really started bringing some of that story out and gave me a way forward about how to write about some of that.
All right. Phenomenal. All right, yeah, Mitchell. So, tough to top unicycling in Korea.
Yeah, I know. I definitely have tried unicycling and it didn't go too well. I got a couple scars to show. So my story, I studied neuroscience in school, all about flow states. And then I went on, coming from a small town in Tennessee, went on a grand adventure to Washington State, somewhere I'd never been, didn't know anyone, got into a lot of different frontier type industries like skydiving, psychedelic medicine, and the cannabis industry. I like the idea of being a pioneer of sorts, and there's not too many places you can do that nowadays. That's kind of the goal. Now I'm back here in Tennessee after lots of grand adventures out west and more focused on learning how to take all these different experiences and turn them into different creative pieces and more into the creator economy. And so your question was, how did I come to the scholarship? I was following David's content. Came across it somehow. The ultimate guide that you wrote, David, it's just like the way you phrase it. Like, you know, you can hear all these things all the time, but if someone says it in a certain way, it just clicks. And it just clicked with me, and I just had to learn more. Found your podcast, Frank, and then heard it mentioned on there about the scholarship. And I was like, you know what? I got to just like throw my name in. Worst case, I don't get it. I already don't have it. So let's just go for it.
Right. Very good. Tommy.
Hey, Frank. I just want to start off by saying thank you so much for having us on this and for the scholarship as well. Like, I'm a big fan of your show, and it's an honor and treat to be here. So it means a lot. But yeah, like my story, I'm a filmmaker in Canada. I kind of started off in doing stuff with music videos, and then as I was doing that, as someone who's also a big podcast listener, it stood out to me that right now we're kind of in this space where podcasts are this billion-dollar industry. Like, there's these amazing shows like Crazy Good Turns, and all of our social platforms that we're using are kind of visual-based rather than audio-based. And so the audio is kind of invisible to get on those. And so I had set out to, as an experiment, to make two podcast trailers, and I did that, and I put those out there, and one of them was for an author I look up to called Derek Sivers, and he shared that, and that went out to his newsletter following, and I woke up one morning to emails from all around the world of all these different people, and that was kind of my first taste of what David talks about as like a serendipity vehicle, this idea of you make something and you put it out there, and then rather than kind of word of mouth talking to individual people, that the opportunities come back towards you. And so after that, I was kind of just doing a series of different client projects that took me through, you know, different entrepreneurs and authors. And I made a show about sustainability in mining. And through all of those, I guess I kind of was so tunnel vision focused on the project each time that I stopped sort of putting my own stuff out at the same time, because those were always on a client's page. And so what really excited me about the scholarship was an opportunity to kind of, I had taken sort of a 4-year span where I just had no social media whatsoever. And I kind of I guess, was just turned off the idea of the internet as a whole as a place of kind of like that, oh, that there's not that much happening out there that isn't just like toxic arguments and stuff. And once I started to engage with David's newsletter and the stuff he was writing, the stuff he was talking about on his North Star podcast, I just really felt like I was kind of hearing like the signal that I wanted to hear of optimism and what this should be like. And I leaned into that.
Terrific. So I don't want to put each of you on the spot, but I will. And then I want to turn to David. But putting you each on the spot, if you said, here's a piece of advice or something I think I learned in the process of the rite of passage that's going to stick with me, what would that be? And I'll make it free form. Whoever wants to jump in and answer first.
I'll go first. I think probably the thing that stuck with me the most is, David, you had the printer versus pixel method, I think is what it's called. So often we try to like make it perfect from the get-go, especially when we're like learning something brand new. And just knowing that it's okay to like do it really, really terribly at first, and then you can make it better. That was so comforting to know that I'm allowed to be terrible, as weird as that sounds.
Yeah, I really liked the concept of personal monopoly. Never heard of anything like that before, and I'd kind of had that unique experience. So learning about just writing about your experiences and thoughts and ideas, how you can develop that over time, is really fascinating concept.
So what is personal monopoly? Explain that, or maybe David will explain that a little bit. What is it?
So once you start writing about your own experiences and thoughts and beliefs, over time, you kind of come to monopolize, I guess, a particular topic or a couple of topics that are really quite unique. So I guess you just continue on with your writing, and over time you'll find what that personal monopoly is. Even if you haven't sort of unicycled in North Korea, you'll have a set of unique experiences that will eventually come out of that creative work that you do.
Yeah, the thing I would add to that is that on the internet, because we all have search technology, differentiation is free marketing. And so if you can be somebody with a unique perspective and a unique way of thinking about things, and somebody who is one of a kind in some way, and it's hard to find that thing. And that's why we write. We write as cartographers to basically make sense of the global map and to orient our compass towards something unique. But once you have that, people can search you and people can find you on social media platforms such as Twitter or TikTok or LinkedIn, whatever it is. There's an infinite number of personal monopolies, and what ends up happening is you become the go-to person. But what's happened with the internet is it's come with a gift and it's come with a curse. And the gift of the internet is a global customer base. If you're running a business or a global audience, you can now, rather than reaching the people in your hometown, like say your local barbershop, you can now reach the entire world as we do with Rite of Passage. But the curse of the internet is competition. And what happened to blue collar jobs in the last 30 years in America and a lot of the West, where a lot of manufacturing jobs went to China, Vietnam, Taiwan, the same thing is going to happen to white-collar jobs now with countries like the Philippines and India. And so what's happening is a lot of those people in these countries outside of the West are just phenomenally talented. And there is a plane of competition that's much bigger. And so if you're trying to stand out in the market, you need to be more differentiated. And often being different is easier than being the best. And so when we talk about building a personal monopoly, that's what we're driving at. How do we stand out to be one of a kind so that we can take advantage of the gift while not being hurt by the curse?
Wow. That's fantastic. All right. Tommy, is there something that sticks in your, you'll be thinking about 5 years from now?
Yeah, one thing that stood out to me a lot was the idea of writing from conversation. And I think especially with coming in with this idea of a personal monopoly, you're like, oh, so that's just like, I just have to be so myself in my own silo, in my own lane. And it's like, actually, it's the opposite of that. What you want is to be in discussion with all these fascinating, curious people. And through that, that discussion, you're going to be able to refine the ideas that are even more uniquely you. Once we were in Rite of Passage and you're, you know, hopping into a breakout room with someone who could be from anywhere in the world and from any background, they might be a psychedelics background or they might be a unicycler. Like it's, you start to really get all these kind of cool converging viewpoints of this person's in tech and this person's in, I don't know, like a professional knitter or something. And it's like, whoa, okay, where's the, what do we align on and where do we defer? And that, I guess just starting to view writing as less of a solitary thing of like going into your dark room and banging away on the keyboard to, oh, this is like, I should just be in really great conversations and making good notes about what we talk about that stands out. That was a really, just a much more fun and exciting version of writing.
Another question to put the three of you on the spot. What was the hardest part? Because I think of writing, honestly, my sister is a novelist, and I think it's really hard work, really hard work. Being in business is simple compared to having a blank sheet of paper in front of you. So I'm just curious, what was the hardest part of going through the course? Kelly, again, I'll start with you.
Well, one of the hard things for me was the 3 a.m. CrossFit sessions, but I got to them.
What was that?
We had sessions called CrossFit for writing, which are kind of super, you know, gym experiences for writers. But because of the timing difference, we started at 3 a.m. here in Australia. But I made them. I made them, and they were awesome. But probably one of the other difficulties was learning to get the feedback from people, and learning how to take the feedback and improve your writing, because you're not used to getting feedback where people say, oh, no, that doesn't make sense, or I don't really like that. So, yeah, it's about learning to accept that feedback and use it to make you write better.
Mitchell, what was the hardest part for you?
I think that it wasn't even actually the course itself, because there's structure and, like, you just kind of carve out this time for this course for those weeks. What was the hardest part was, like, right after the course ended, keeping it going and, like, maintaining a habit of any sort. And it took me a couple weeks to get it dialed in, but now I have luckily someone I met in the course, probably going to be lifelong friends. Now we meet 5 days a week every morning at 6 a.m. So it took a minute to figure that out, but that was probably the hardest part, is, like, all this great information, like, life-changing. And then it could totally fall off if you let it. But luckily you meet all these people and then accountability kicks in, consistency kicks in.
I suspect, and David, you can comment on this, but I suspect that that's a lot of what's gained through the course is what you get from your peers.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's one of the questions that I'm just obsessed with is how can we take Rite of Passage and get extremely high quality, serious, intense, and ambitious people. And I want people to come into Rite of Passage and say, I've never seen a group of people who are like this. And one of the things that concerns me about the modern world is I think that often standards have gone down. And I think especially standards in online programs where people are paying to participate. And I think that there's many different ways to have standards. There's standards from a teacher and an instructor where you can kick people out and where you yell at people. And I'm not interested in doing that. What I'm interested in is the kind of feeling that you get when you're around great athletes or something. And they're on the basketball court or they're at the golf course. And they're is a certain competitiveness and a certain cooperation. And everyone's there, they're taking it seriously, they're enjoying themselves, and they're on a mission. And how to build that on the internet in a way where people don't engage physically is tricky. But what we have as a benefit is the ability to go, like I was saying earlier, to take that gift of the internet, which is the global recruitment pool, and attract those people. And if we can do that, I think we have something really special on our hands.
That's excellent. Excellent. Tommy, what was the toughest part for you?
They do such an amazing job of creating all these different versions, like David has a really good analogy for it. The rite of passage is like Coachella for writing. And I think that's like really true in that there's, you know, there's this main stage event of what the headliner is, but then at any given time, there's also, you know, there's mentor sessions where you can go into those and you get these specific focuses of maybe one person is very focused on newsletters versus social media, like how to use Twitter to grow your following. And so it's just, there's such an abundance of things that I would have loved to go to every single session. And it was, I guess, just figuring out, okay, what for where I'm at right now in my journey with this, where can I put myself in and be able to give the most to this group as well as to learn the most from this. And there was just a lot of really exciting stuff happening all at once.
So I assume, David, that one of the things you do in running this is that you intensely get feedback, that's part of the positive nature of an online course like this, is that you can get feedback in the way you can't in other venues. Is that accurate or not?
Yeah, so that's actually something that we didn't do well for the first 6 or 7 cohorts. The last cohort, every single piece of writing received a piece of feedback, and we want to continue to push the envelope on that. And so what we're working on is having basically what we call a group of community stewards who are trained editors. When I talk about editing, you know, we often think of the teacher with the red pen, and that person is saying there's periods and there's commas and there's semicolons that are out of the place.
Don't split that infinitive.
Right. Yeah. But what I'm talking about, and I think that what we're going for in Rite of Passage is something deeper, and these are these thought partners who are working with you to actually get their hands dirty inside the wet clay of ideas and to shape them into something beautiful with you.
Wow, that's terrific. So do you have a question for your 3 scholarship folks?
What's been the thing that you've been chewing on, like that one idea, like a thread that you keep pulling on since you've left Rite of Passage, that some combination of it started with an epiphany but is now an open question for you?
Similar to the writing from conversation, just like pulling from your life, like you don't necessarily have to go out into the internet and go get everything. Like you already have a lot of things to talk about and to say from your own experience. And so just thinking about applying my perspective at scale, or just putting it out on the internet, which is the scale part, is a really interesting idea. And I actually got invited, this kind of relates, I got invited to go volunteer at a natural burial site here in Tennessee. And my first thought was like, this is just like such juicy experience to like turn into words, you know, like we got to put this on the internet. And so that whole writing from conversation thing has changed everything. Like, you know, I'm like looking at all my life, through a different lens of like, how do I write this so that not only is it like in my memory and clear, my thinking around it, but also put it out there in a valuable way too.
So a thing that was emphasized in Rite of Passage was the idea of kind of making the first move. Like that if you see someone whose like curiosity seems like it overlaps somewhere, that you should proactively reach out, say, hey, like it sounds like we got a lot in common, it'd be great to hop on a call, or you maybe give them feedback on their essay, and then you use that to kind of go up this ladder of familiarity with a person, start to build a relationship of a friendship online. And I guess the next, like, kind of, if that's the map that you use in Rite of Passage, and then you're going out beyond the frontier with that, it's like this idea of how when you're on Twitter, like I didn't have any social media presence really when Rite of Passage ended, and then I have started it up, and it's just been cool to kind of think of this idea of like, what's it like to be sort of a neighbor on the internet? Like how do you start to cultivate that sense of friendship from zero with someone that you don't know in a way that feels natural and authentic and that just kind of grows. And it's that thing of, you know, getting used to this person posted something and you write a comment here, and then maybe after a few of those you send a DM, and then and just starting to build that sense of familiarity with maybe someone who, you know, for me, for instance, I'm at like, I don't know, like 200 something Twitter followers. So someone who's got 1,000, they're a bit further ahead in terms of where they're at with their audience. But if you're kind of going about it in a conscious way in terms of seeing where someone who's got a lot of similar curiosities to you, where you might be able to start to build that conversation. I guess that's a thing I'm exploring right now.
That's very cool. The neighbor on the internet's a great, that's very cool. Kelly?
I think for me, it's about that kind of writing from abundance concept. Wow. I mean, most people doing this course, I think David would agree, we're all fairly curious kind of people. And we probably tended to have interesting, curious conversations before we came to Rite of Passage. But having done Rite of Passage and thinking about how we could bring some of that curiosity into our writing, I tend to focus more now when I'm having interesting conversations around, I will probably explore things a little bit more than maybe I would have previously, and just get into deeper and deeper, I guess, discussions with people, and then come back and capture them in the information capture system. And there's now I kind of have too many things, you know, that I can write about. But it that whole concept, yeah, of just that writing from abundance, I think just leads you more into curiosity and interesting discussions in your life.
I want to thank the three of you for applying and then appearing on the show, going through the program, obviously. But as I said at the start, I think what intrigues me here and what I think is so important about what David is doing is that the internet is an interestingly amazing tool and an interestingly destructive tool. And so it's great to pull out and hear from the folks who are trying to make it positive. And I, you know, that neighbor on the internet, find neighbors, find people you can help, find people you can tell stories to that make a difference. It's hugely, hugely impactful. And congratulations, David, on what you're doing. I'm going to give David a chance to make some final comments. But before getting to that, everybody that I ask on the show, I ask, who's done a crazy good turn for you? Who's the person, anybody, just a crazy good turn? Someone who's done something that you remember and that you wouldn't mind giving a shout out on the podcast.
Crazy good turn was just a friend who was around for a challenging conversation at 2:30 a.m. one morning. And she helped me make it through a really tough year. So I want to give a shout out to Carolyn.
And did Carolyn get you on the unicycle, or was that after the unicycle?
Carolyn actually bought me my first unicycle, and it sat in the back of her car for 10 years. So
there you go. All right. Mitchell or Tommy, crazy good turn.
That's a hard question. I feel like I'm going to leave so many people out. But what first came to mind that I haven't thought of in a long time that is a crazy good turn is my former boss. When I lived in Washington State, I pitched him an idea of a whole new position, remote position, first remote position in the company. And luckily he said yes, and that enabled so many trickling effects, like getting my own house and like all this stuff and remote work and being with the family and like all these things that wouldn't have happened otherwise. And so I want to shout out him. His name's Eric.
All right. Well done, Eric. Very cool. And Tommy?
The person who comes to mind is my Uncle Mike. There was about, I guess it was like a year after I graduated from film school, I had been working on a bunch of different projects, and I was kind of experiencing a lot of actually the silo thing that I was talking about earlier of trying to write in my own bubble. And I got a call from my Uncle Mike on a satellite phone. He works in mining exploration. And he was like, "Hey, Tommy, I'm up in Yukon, like up in the mountains here." And the line's super crackly. And he's like, "I'm wondering if you want to come out here for to do some exploration with me." Basically, I ended up going to the Yukon for about like a couple months and literally hand trenching silver with him in the mountains and just talking about, we were literally on the side of mountain faces, taking rocks, splitting them open and looking inside if there was silver on this like very rich deposit full of kind of that the head geologist had discovered through looking at like the old land records of this area. And just, I had been in kind of a tech startup before that and just very in my head with thinking about how to change the way we do visual communication and all this. It was just so different in terms of a labor thing and just being out in the fresh air and being in a different space. And that chunk of time is something that I look back on all the time.
That's very cool. Very cool. So I asked David the last time in you know, last year, and that prompted the answer of Tyler Cowen. I don't know if you have another person that you want to give this. You get to give a second shout out if you want, David.
I think that, so I visited Ireland about 2 weeks ago, and I had a friend who I spent a lot of time with in New York. He's an Irish guy, and he gave me a phenomenal tour of Ireland. And I said I wanted to do one thing. And I wanted to go just outside of Galway on the west of Ireland and visit the hometown of my favorite poet, John O'Donohue. And he's sort of has these Celtic roots, Christian guy, and had just this prose that I just never seen in my life, just a quality. And so I went to his hometown, I went to the bookstore, and I bought every single book that he'd ever written, and I was reading it this morning, and it was just so moving having been to his hometown to then read what I was seeing again. And I think so often in life, just having people who can just take you by the hand and he spent 4 days showing me around Ireland for no reason, just around him feeling patriotic about his country and wanting to share an experience with me. But just being in his hometown and whatever heart was in that place, I really hope it affects my writing and my work, because he means a lot to me. And having a friend drive me clear across Ireland to go visit this hometown was just a really beautiful experience.
That's terrific. And I've got to say, thank you, David. Thank you for the writings that you put out. They're so thought-provoking, and for what you're doing more generally with Rite of Passage. And thank Kelly and Mitchell and Tommy. It's an interesting process for people out of a whole bunch of applications. And then this is the first time we've been face to face and going, God, these people are great. This is awesome. I really appreciate your spending time here. I always also give every guest an opportunity to just tell listeners how to follow up with them if they are interested in following up. So I'll start with David. How do people who have listened to this and they go, boy, I just need to know more about what's going on with David Perrell, where do they go?
Yeah, just go to my website, perrell.com, P-E-R-E-L-L.com, 1 R 2 L's, or just search David Perrell, 50 Days of Writing, and you'll get a free 50-day email course on the mechanics of online writing, focused on capturing ideas, putting ideas onto the page, and then getting your ideas distributed so they're actually read.
Fantastic. And Kelly? Any place that if somebody wants to follow up, somebody who's thinking about unicycling in Laos or something?
You can find me. I've got a website, which is onewheelonly.com. It's number one.
Thank you.
All right. Terrific. And Mitchell?
My website, mitchellwilson.co, Mitchell with two L's.
Terrific. And Tommy?
Yeah, so my full name is Thomas Elliott Lee, so my website is tomelee.com. So just Tom, the letter E, and then Lee, L-E-E.com.
All right, fantastic. Well, thank you all again. And I know since Kelly's in Australia and Tommy's in Canada, Mitchell's here in the U.S., it proves out David's point that this was a very international undertaking, and I appreciate all of you because there's some time zone stress that you all have to deal with as well. But thank you very much for participating.
Thanks, Frank.
I'd like to close by thanking our excellent production team, Brian Sabin, Megan Hanlon, Stephen Key, and Score in Los Angeles. Without their help, this podcast would not exist. So we thank them very much and look forward to having you on our next podcast. Thanks. Bye.